I'm having a shit day. I'm going to tell you I'm having a shit day.
He wears his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah, I wear my heart on my sleeve, and that's the same with education.
Testing yourself and putting yourself in uncomfortable positions is a really important part of your everyone's development.
Yeah.
I think when you stop feeling uncomfortable, it can get very boring.
Barbering for me was one of the most uncool things growing up.
It was for a while, I think.
We all had Justin Bieber haircuts, and the way you achieved that was just growing your hair out and hoping.
Everybody had the flick, man.
I reckon you could still do the flick.
Let's bring it back.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban. Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We are here in Belfast at the Great British Barber Bash. I am joined by Ollie Foster.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Ollie. Thank you so much. And Brandon Murphy.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Really impressed with you guys and with kind of Barber Bash, because I love that you guys have your day jobs, if you like. You have two stores, number 47 in Chester. Got that right. And you're... You rent a chair in Dundee?
Yeah, I'm self-employed, renting a chair in a shop called Lovett's in Dundee.
Excellent, thank you. Thanks for the help. But you still managed to find time. You come out, you've been on the stand, you're on the stage, you've been here since first thing, flown out to Belfast for it. So if we can, I want to talk about that. Let's backtrack a little bit and just talk about your careers, first of all.
Yeah.
And then how and when Barber Bash entered your lives. So if we start from your point of view as a store owner.
Yes.
How's that gone? Where are you? When did you start that?
Well, it's been one heck of a journey, and not one journey that I can hold down, which is just mine.
Right.
I'm very lucky I get to share my career, my life, my earnings, everything with my mum.
Okay.
Me and my mum are co-owners of number 47.
She's she a was lovely, the one lovely, lovely lady.
She's excellent. Lovely. She's over there. She's an absolute hero and a saint. She was the one that actually kick-started number 47 herself without any kind of encouragement or anything from me. I was a late bloomer, but in the way that it worked is when I was 16, we all have a choice at 16, right? You can either go into an apprenticeship, into work, or into sixth form, depending on how you are academically. And I would like to put myself in a more academic group. I'm quite good at facts and figures and working things out. I like to have a definitive conclusion to things. So I went on and did sixth form. And at the end of sixth form, my mum had a little village salon in a little town called Cristleton, which is where my high school was. And barbering for me was one of the most uncool things
it was,
growing
but it
up.
It was for a while, I think.
It was just, there was male grooming, had no kind of combination with the young male audience.
Yeah, so it didn't have traction.
There was absolutely nothing. Yeah. We all had Justin Bieber haircuts, and the way you achieved that was just growing your hair out and hoping that your hair suited that movement, you know what I mean?
Everybody
it was a
had
thing.
The flick, man.
I reckon
everybody
you could still flick. Do the flick.
Yeah,
can you give me a, can
you... Let's bring it back.
So anyway, Pro Hair Live Manchester. My mum wanted to go, and she was going with all of her team. And like hairdressers do, they go out and they have a few too many drinks on a Saturday night, and everyone cancelled on her. So I got woke up on the Sunday going, will you come with me, please? My thought was trainers, Chinese meal at Wings, I'm going to get looked after.
Cool.
But what happened was I walked into that room and I fell in love with an industry and loads of things that come with it, which for 18-year-old me at the time was the women.
Yeah.
It was the good music taste, the fashion, and just not a generic job. I wanted to be a PE teacher initially. That's what I was training towards. So teaching's kind of in my blood. So I got a hairdressing apprenticeship. But the most important thing to me was being in a band. I only wanted to be in my band, Vince, and it was the only thing that I had one track mind for. And when that came to a close for me, my teaching job wasn't cutting it. So I was doing Saturdays at 47 from the start as a Saturday boy, come apprentice, very quickly come stylist, very quickly come senior stylist. And then when I kind of, my mum was, she never kind of did the easy road with me. She made me do my time on each of the steps. And when I started looking past the haircut and started looking at a service, that was the point where she said, why don't you come to an accountant's meet with me and start to see what this business entails? And that's where my director's journey kind of started, maybe about 7 years ago. So maybe 3 years into my barbering career, six in total, if you add my time as a hairdresser in as well. Mm. But it's been a great journey to get to the first step.
You've come into it at a very different time. You've arrived in the industry where it's all sexy and all fun and all, you know, it's kind of the coolest job you can have, really.
And if I'm honest, I actually came into the industry entirely by accident. So similar to Ollie, when I was younger, the primary focus I had was music. I love playing drums. I still play drums. And when I was in school, I didn't think barbering was cool either. And I actually remember being like, if my friends were into it, I was like, really? You know what I mean? Like, you want to style guys' hair all day? I didn't find it to be something that was interesting to me. And part of that was like, I actually got anxiety about going for haircuts because I didn't know what style I wanted.
Yeah.
I didn't have the confidence in myself to ask for the thing that I wanted, you know? So I went through school just messing around and playing drums. And then I made a decision to go to uni to study music, which for me was really important for development because I got to learn so much about music, but also just putting myself forward and just becoming more of myself instead of being worried about what people were thinking about me. So then as I was studying music, I was coming towards the end of a 4-year degree and started thinking like, I need to get a job. You know, like in Scotland, we get something called SAS, which is a student
sassy
award. Yeah, sassy. Well, you feel sassy when you get it, bro. So it's like they give you, I think it's like $6,000 a year split into payments, right?
Right.
And it's to help you. It's a loan, though. So you're studying and you're getting these payments, and I was doing music at the side as well. So I had some money. And at the end of the 4 years, it's like that SAS stops. You've got nothing. And I was like, what do I do? And I was in a wedding band at the time with the guy who owns Lovitz. And he just opened his second shop and he needed an apprentice. So in my head, I'm like, he doesn't look unhappy. You know, he actually looks like he enjoys his life. He gets to be creative and he gets to talk to people and be quite open with who he is. He dresses how he wants and he makes decent money. And I come from like a background where we didn't have too much money, so that was an attraction for me. I was like, okay, I'll make money cutting hair and I'll use that money to pay for my equipment and I'll just pursue drums. So I finished my degree, handed in the dissertation. 1 week later, I go in to the shop to be the apprentice, and Liam, the owner of Lovitz, turns to me and he's like, could you get a model in today? And I was like, I don't know, like. So I'd been handing out flyers all day. I messaged one of my mates and he's like, yeah, no problem. So all of a sudden I've got someone coming in, first day on the job, and he's wanting to walk me through a two back and sides, which is relatively easy haircut.
Yeah, but great baptism of fire. That's great, isn't it?
So he got him in and we began the haircut and I realized like, this is way harder than what I thought it was going to be. Yeah, you'll know yourself. It's like, it looks easy because the people that do it for us are really good at it.
I think it's something that you forget because I'm training my apprentice up at the moment and he's getting all of his friends in.
Yeah.
And you forget that before you own your craft, you're learning your craft, right? And when they're sitting in your chair, the backlash off your friends, the pictures of that haircut in group chats, taking pictures of your friend, doing what we do with all of our models that we've done today. Imagine doing that to a 17-year-old friend. Oh. All of the group chats, it's a brave thing for the individual and the client to do as well.
And I think you forget, you know, like ice skating, the professionals make it look so easy, but everyone's got to fall on their ass at some point.
Yeah, the shit once.
To get there, you know, you've got to get there. So, I mean, I had this conversation earlier today, but, you know, certainly now the kind of the people coming into the industry are, you know, have done A-levels, have done degree courses.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're meeting people in their second, third court, you know, their second or third career.
Yeah.
That have had life experience, have a more academic brain. You have, whereas I think historically, you know, it has been like, you know, you can't do anything else or, you know, that your way of learning is
hands
actually
on,
doing
yeah.
hands on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that both of you have found your careers, you know, albeit at different points.
Yeah.
Focusing back on training.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, the apprentices in your store or, you know, coming to something like Barber Bash and the commitment that you've made to to come up and get on stage.
Absolutely, yeah.
At which point, obviously, from your point of view, yeah, you're still quite young in your career, mm-hmm. and not so much.
I'm getting so
angry. I can say that,
I'm hit 30 and I'm starting lurking into that category.
But you both have got that aspiration to kind of share the craft and share the inspiration. How have you hung on to that? Is that part of it, or did you enjoy your training so much that you want to share it?
I think I believe it's in your blood.
Right.
And again, I'll use my mum as an example. It's easy because we're blood, so it's easy to separate people. My mum's a very shut book. She likes to keep things close to her chest. And I'm the complete opposite. Right. If I'm having a shit day, I'm going to tell you I'm having a shit day.
He wears his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah, I wear my heart on my sleeve. And that's the same with education. I believe you've got to be real. Mm. When you educate, it's about being real. You know, today, for example, Brandon... What happened today? Tell him what happened today.
Yeah, so today I was on the stage and it was actually
just...
You didn't
get that blue plaster from cutting,
just before we started cutting, I was talking to Ollie and Ollie was telling me about a time where he'd experienced cutting his hand and I was like, oh, I've not cut my hair on stage yet. That's not happened. And I went on stage. I was in the middle of doing it. Everything was going well. Picked it up. Bosh, bosh, bosh. Sliced my knuckle and it's like the tiniest little paper cut, but... As you know, if you work in the hair industry, like the smallest cut becomes like the biggest problem. Yeah. So I'm like trying to tell people like, could you give me a plaster? Could you give me a plaster? And everyone's like, wait, trying to figure out what's going on. So I'm like using one hand to comb and style. And then with my other hand, I've just kind of got it in my pocket. I'm like, don't want anyone to see how much blood is on my hand.
But that's the important thing, Brandon. If you think about it, like we're relaying it. Information to an audience to follow, and we like to teach people not what to do but how to think. That's our kind of Barber Bash ethos, if you like. We don't like to just show this is what we're doing and this is how you get that look. It's think about it, and if you did this it would give you a different result and how and why. Me and Brandon had the exact same conversation. I could go back 9 years to one of my first ever Barber Bash shows and remember cutting this guy's neck on stage in Edinburgh College and it was awful. It was the most awful, embarrassing experience in my young little career.
Nicking a client or cutting yourself in the shop is bad enough. You feel like an ass. Doing it on stage with an audience is just horrendous.
But this is the reality of the barbering industry. I guarantee how many people you've cut and nicked yourself. It happens all the time. And if it's going to happen in the shop, it's going to happen on stage. Yeah. And not just to every Tom, Dick and Harry, to the educators, because we're all in the same industry with the same downfalls and the same upfalls. All happens for a reason. And today he's learned a lesson. We've feedbacked and now we've got a solution for how to work better next time for when it happens, not if, it's when, because it's always going to happen again.
Yeah. It showed me, you know, like when we do these kind of things, like we're putting ourselves in such an intense and personal situation, you know, and obviously, when you're in the shop, if things like this happen, you could just be like, give me a second, mate.
And you know everybody.
Walk off to the side. Yeah, everybody's completely, it's just a normal thing. Yeah. But when you're in that kind of situation, you have adrenaline, you're like excited, you're nervous. And something like that happens, it's like you have to try and figure it out whilst also being aware of things like timing, how your model's looking to the people in front of you, how you're going to finish the style and how you're going to carry it off. And there's like, there's more things to think about. And like I said, I've never cut myself on stage before. No. So it's
if we retreat back a little bit, you know, first haircuts on stage, first live hair. I still remember my first live haircut, and that was a while ago. There's an intensity to it, and there is an excitement. And both of you obviously, have grown up as one, you know, that performer's in you.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you remember your first haircut? Was it a positive thing or was it something that you stressed yourself to pieces about? How did that go?
I definitely remember my first hairdressing one less so because I was 18 and I had zero hair knowledge.
Sure.
I know somebody was almost talking to me, but I remember my first barber one to a T. On the Saturdays, that same as you, he said, can you get a model tonight? And I was like, I want to do a haircut. So I said to Lynn, my mum, we say Lynn in work. We never, ever say mum in work. I'd said to Lynn, can I do a friend after work? So I just put it on Facebook and got somebody in like that. No problem. And she said, right, while I've told you what to do in the first bit, I'm just going to run to the shop, bargain booze, and get a couple of little tins of gin because it's going to take you a while to do this. By the time she'd gone, come back, I'd done the sides, blended it all in, and was ready to learn what was going on the top. Because I'd spent time watching her, I had prior knowledge of the hair industry. And for me, it was a positive experience where I came away going, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do this and I can do it well. And I always say to my apprentices in time, you know, the process will come. You learn a process. It's like learning to drive. You learn to pass a test and then you figure out who you are.
Yeah,
the same with this. As long as you can get the consistency, great. And how do you figure out the consistency? With a distraction.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that I always say to my apprentices is if you can hold a conversation from the start to the finish of a haircut, there's a visual distraction. If you went to one of the beef eater pubs or something along those lines, and you know what you're getting, you're getting a bang average pub meal.
Yeah.
The service is top dollar. Are you going back?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Of course you are. But if you go to the best steak restaurant in town and get a perfect steak, well, the waiter treats you like rubbish.
Yeah.
Are you going back?
No, absolutely.
So that's how I valued the business at the start, from a service
and
point
yourself?
Of view.
So that actually, what Ollie touched on there is the idea, when I sat that first client down in the chair and I realized how difficult it was, that was when something clicked in me where I was like, there's more to this. Because I think that, like, as people, one thing that's super important is that we have things that we can keep working on throughout our life. And that's essentially where we find purpose. You know, we find things that we like and we just slowly build on them. And as we're building on them, we become better. We find out more about ourselves.
Brandon,
we find
stop.
Out more
I'm about to start crying.
Around us.
I'm about to start crying.
So I get accused sometimes of going a little bit too deep, but this is how I thought about it. Right? And it's like...
No, but I think being, you know, testing yourself and putting yourself in uncomfortable positions is a really is a really important part of everyone's development.
Yeah.
I think when you stop feeling uncomfortable,
exactly.
It can get very boring.
Exactly. You know, think, if you find something that you can commit time to and find pressure within, then just keep doing it.
Yeah.
If it makes you feel good, keep doing it.
And I think that's where the Barber Bash education team, for me as an individual, has changed the plateau that I believed I was in.
Yeah.
I was running a lot of the courses on my own. I was me and Gary in the car everywhere, and it's just you standing on your own with your own team behind you. And when you're the leader of the shop and everything around that, there's no one to go, there you go, unless you put yourself out again and go on courses,
which
I didn't have the time to do.
But, you know, I mean, I can see, and I speak to lots of young barbers, and this place is packed with it. It's amazing the turnout here today.
It's class how many people are just enthusiastic.
The energy levels, you can't help it. It's
on
amazing.
A Sunday.
But you guys have, I can kind of see this, and I speak to a lot of barbers who want to be able to do that. And I can understand that bit. But equally, you're also, the one thing about Barber Bash is that you're going into, like, kind of, you know, Crawley College and others, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
That in a real grassroots way that keeps that energy going. Where's the drive for you to do that? Now, so I can understand being here with a load of mates and enjoying that and the kind of, you know, feeling a bit rock and roll. But, you know, teaching in front of a class in a college is not so much, but probably much more real.
Yeah.
Why do you give your time to Barber Bash? Why do you work so hard for
something
it?
That I think about, knowledge, I guess, is like, knowledge not shared is knowledge wasted. So it's like, I was able to essentially change my life a little bit from learning how to cut hair because I didn't have any money. And now I get to travel with the Barber Bash education team. I have a clientele. I've just been... brought on as an ambassador for Osmo. So now I get to work with really good products. And I wouldn't have had that if someone didn't take time to teach me. And so I think that if you're confident in what you do and you are passionate about other people doing the same, then you should take the time to teach them.
You know?
And I think that in a way, it's the way that me and Ollie can give back to the industry that we work with in.
I was just going to add on to that entirely. For me, other than the massive wages that we get paid, which is a massive drive, it couldn't be further from that. When you say about the glamour, you don't see the 7 hours that we spend in the car going over the same things that we go over every week, defining who we are, what we're going to do, and one of the what's harder than telling one of your brothers or your boss or whoever it is that we're working with, what they could do better or taking on the criticism, that's why we do it.
Yeah, of course.
I don't want to come off stage and somebody go, perfect.
Yeah.
If there's somebody says to me that's perfect, it's done. It's over.
Yeah.
And in regards to all the college things, I enjoy being versatile. Today isn't about education for me. It's about the other two. It's barber socializing and barber culture. Yeah. We're up here to give a brief teaser of what we do when we do our classes. Mm. I'm not going to break things down 100%. I'm going to break it down for you 40% to give you enough of a nibble to come and want to see what we do at 80% when we do our workshops, for example, or our look and learns where we can really dissect things down and break it down in a small team. For example, if me and Brandon were educating, obviously we've had Daz up there as well with us today. There's three opinions. When there's two of our opinions, it's a completely different experience. Sure. And in the college, again, think about what it is. You're in college. You're going to be doing things that you probably shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
Debate in your life. But we're there to give the purpose. As you say, we're giving somebody a purpose to go, right, this is the end goal.
Yeah.
Now I need to micro goal set to get there. I mean, how did you originally get involved in the Barber Bash? How was your foot in the door? How did that come to you?
So I would come along to the shows, and like, if you've ever been to a Barber Bash, you'll know there's a main stage and then there's like chairs around the room.
Yeah.
And those chairs around the room, like, you have to get in touch with the Barber Bash, ask to do it, sort out your own model. And if you turn up and people watch you cut, amazing. But you could turn up and no one will care that you're cutting. So I used to just do that because I was like, this is something cool. You know, this is something I want to be a part of. And then what actually happened was, at a certain point, Gary, who runs the Barber Bash, took notice of me, and he could tell that I was like wanting to do a little bit more than just work in the shop. So then you would have spoke with Ollie and the rest of the guys and thought, should we bring him on? So my first show was in Aberdeen College. I got a call from Gary. I had him on WhatsApp and he was just like, we have a show that we want to bring you on. It's in Aberdeen College. So I was like, cool.
Is that me, you and Sam?
Yeah, you and Sam Massey, yeah.
We had a great lunch in a pub.
Yeah, it was class.
I can't remember where.
So we turned up. I got picked up in the morning. I'm in a car full of people that I'm unfamiliar with. You look nervous. You get brought to the college. The college brings you the models. And just from there, I just zoned in. I was like, okay, I know what I have to do. I think the fact that similar to Ollie, because I've done music in the back of my life the whole time, the stage thing wasn't as nerve-wracking.
Sure.
The thing was just making sure that what I was saying was actually worth it. You know, it wasn't wasting words. So we went through that. And I actually remember I done two models, and then we came off, and then we had to do a stage presentation. So we done two models in a classroom, then a stage presentation. And in the middle, we went for dinner. And as we were having lunch together, Gary turned to me and he's like, we're hosting the Barber Bash, like this kind of event, but in Glasgow. And we want you to cut on the stage. And I was like, okay. So in my head, I'm like, oh, okay.
This was before any Barber Bash education team, wasn't it? This was just you getting up as Brandon Murphy Hair and doing your thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, so that was probably about 8 months ago, maybe 9 months ago. And I was like, okay, sorted out my model, turned up on the day, done it. And then Gary then says, we're going to do more work together. And I got a call saying they're trying to assemble, you know, like the Avengers. They're trying to assemble that, but for the Barber Bash. And I had to come down to Ollie's shop in Chester. And the rest is just kind of history. It's all just flowing. You know?
But a lot of this, presumably, certainly in the beginning, you are doing as you're doing for nothing. You're doing it out of your pocket.
I mean,
naturally, I mean, that first time that you're talking about when we came to Chester, I mean, you know how it is in barbering. You chuck four lads that kind of know each other. It was four guys at the time. And we all got chucked out on a night out together, didn't we, really?
Yeah, yeah.
And just said, go and be friends. Go and do your thing. Yeah. And the four of us are still solidly in a clique. So myself, Brandon, Daz and Brody, we're still the four originals that started the Barber Bash education, if you like, with Gary. And what a team that we had there. The versatility of our group is ridiculous. We don't just want to sit here and say, this is what we do. We have ethoses, we have thought processes, and we have things that we do. But Brandon's his own stylist. Brandon has his own thing that I could stand here and tell you a million things about what Brandon does unbelievably. And the same about Daz and Brody and Patsy and
I can say the same about Ollie.
You know? You've seen that growth in, I mean, for you, it's been quite immediate, really, if it's been within the last 12 months.
Yeah, well, that's why this is the first time I've cut my hair on stage. You know what I mean?
Basically, how do you balance that with your clientele, with your work, and you're Dundee, so apart from Glasgow, everywhere's a bleeding long way away.
So,
no disrespect to Dundee, but it is a fair way out.
It's a while away. So I'll give you an example. I played Barber Connect. We cut a Barber Connect 2 weeks ago. But like I said, I played drums. On the day, the day before Barber Connect, I was playing drums until 11 p.m. I had to get the drums out of my car immediately, probably about 11:45 at night at this point. And then I had to just drive straight to a halfway point and stay in a travel lodge, right? Where I slept for about 3 hours, woke up, and then drove the rest of the way to Birmingham to then present at Barber Connect. And so one thing, the one quality that I find strong within myself is that, like, I will do it. You know, like, I'll be tired, but I care about this, you know? And I think that's the thing about the Barber Bash education team is we're all so passionate that we just make it work. And it actually kind of lends itself to the clientele back home, because now we have social media. And when people go,
they're very aware of else you do rather than just being behind the chair. You're doing lots of other things.
So I get to cut like new people's hair because of the fact that they've seen what I do. Yeah. You know, it's an interest.
And isn't it a great thing when somebody comes and sits in your chair? I mean, I had this for the first time in a long while yesterday, because I don't really get a chance to do new clients because the bookings are just filtered so far in the future. But when I get that new, she sat in the chair, the girl, and she just said, "I've come to you because I've watched what you do and I love it."
Lovely.
Yeah.
What a compliment. Yeah, couldn't get more of a compliment.
But how do you balance yours? So you've got the two stores. Obviously, your mum works with you, so that's a help. But you know,
I mean,
you know, I'm running stores. I know how much it takes up.
Without my mum, I simply couldn't do this.
Right.
And that, or I couldn't do one of...
So you need that. You do need that core team behind you.
I break my life up into different subsections, as we all do. I've got the running of the business, which has nothing to do with standing behind that chair.
Yeah.
I've got to do... I'm allowed to do my 50 hours behind the chair because Lynn's doing the...
Of course.
Them parts of the business. I'm still attending the correct meetings and I'm still putting myself in and around the running of the company. But they always say you can't run a company from inside.
Mm.
You can only run a company from watching.
No,
and since I've been able to stand behind the chair and I do that internal part that still needs to happen, whereas Lynn's running it from the outside in going, that works.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. And when you're in it, in the trenches, pulling things up, going, I can't clean. I need my apprentice to do this.
A common theme I saw, and this is like an amazing thing that you do, a theme that I've saw is like when an owner of a shop takes himself out of the shop and stops actually being there in the trenches, as you say, it can quite quickly fall apart, because then people were like, why am I giving this person my money when they're not even here doing the same thing that I am? So I think, like, obviously, as a shop owner, from what I see, like you say, I'm not a shop owner, but I can observe how the shop owner work.
And that's the most important part, Brandon, is that seeing that somebody who's not just sat there collecting money is seen as the one that runs around with the money. That belongs to the company.
Yeah,
the money belongs to the company, not the owners. And that's a difficult thing. So when you come away from the chair, what else are you going to do other than... Be a sub tax man for the tax man. That's what your job is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's not necessarily to put the money in the till, it's to separate the money.
You know, you've managed to find this space for you guys, or you've worked to find this space for you guys to get up and share and train.
Yeah.
How do you two feel about the kind of general education in the industry? Because I hear and firmly believe that the quality has never been higher in the barbering industry. And like I say, I've been doing this 40 years. The quality is incredibly high.
Mm.
But are we delivering it as well across the board? Not just from not from what you guys do, but you're going into colleges, you're meeting different barbers, you're interviewing barbers, you're working alongside. Do you think we're managing, the industry is managing to deliver the education that's needed?
I think, in my perspective, so I actually didn't study at college myself. And I think in my perspective, what I've realized is, like, if you want to learn, then you'll put yourself around the people that know how to do it. Mm. And so when you do that, then the education that you'll receive is of the highest quality.
Yeah.
You know, you'll find a way. But I think that, like, just see if the individual that's trying to learn is kind of half-heartedly doing it, then they can get a much different version of the education. Like, two people can be sitting in the same class, but if you're passionate about learning, you're going to come away with a lot more.
Yeah.
So as much as we're in a position where it's gotten harder, but there's so much more access to it. Like, there's online stuff, there's these shows, there's people that will go into shops and train people. But it comes down solely to the individual. Like, how much do you want to know, and how much will you spend time learning? You know? Yeah.
And yourself, do
I've
you find
got
that
nothing th- more to add other than that was unbelievable.
Well, you got this. So, but you have apprentices.
Yeah.
You train in your stores.
Yeah.
And you're training out here. Has doing this education team with Barber Bash changed the way you train in store, or do the way you train with Barber Bash reflect what you train in store?
I think what Barber Bash education and the way that we teach, which is different, is that I don't believe that there's a right or a wrong way. A lot of education is always to say no. I like to say yes. If you say yes to people and you can explain to me why, who's got a problem with that?
Yeah.
If we always like to say we will cut the top first, implement shape and work to that, but there's a time where you don't. Don't use thinning scissors, it's wrong. Why would they be invented? Of course they benefit us. So many different techniques that we use and we use day to day that people would say no. It's a yes if used in the correct way.
Yeah.
So I think education, the way that it developed from when, you know, I was a kid to now, used to get told no. I like to say yes. Adapt on it, work to your strengths. Don't just work to what you think is a no, you know?
I actually want to touch just solely on the idea that the thinning scissor is a bad thing, because for some reason it's got like such an odd stigma around it. It's like, oh, if you're using a thinning scissor, then you've not, like, I don't know. For some reason, people think it's not a good thing, right? The analogy that I've had taught to me and the analogy that I think about is, if you're a plumber, right, and you got all these different kinds of plumbing tools, right, and you turn up and there's another plumber at the job and you're both working together, but you want a specific kind of wrench, but the guy who you're working with is like, oh, you can't use that. You can't use that. And you're like, this is the perfect tool to turn the thing that I need to turn to do this job. And he's like, no, but if you use that, then it's like, you're just inexperienced. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. No. And it's not common in many other trades. So as barbers, and like Ollie's saying, we should be able to confidently use all the tools as freely as we need to create the image that we want.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a great ability to kind of blame. You know what I mean? I mean, I love softening scissors. I love a razor. I love a blade. I love a clipper. Mm. And I'll use all in every different way.
Right, yeah.
I certainly use thinning scissors a lot, and I use a clipper on longer hair a lot. And I think it's about that result. And I think certainly after
a focal point.
Certainly after 40 years of cutting hair. It's my choice as to what tool is the right thing for the outcome that's in my head. I think the problem is that a lot of younger barbers are seeing and using thinning scissors as a massive shortcut. Mm. And the bad side of thinning scissors is growing out a haircut that's been thinned to buggery is a nightmare for the next poor sod.
And I think just to move on from what you said.
Yeah, that's totally true.
Just to move on from what we said there about education now. I learned in a physical.
Yeah.
You know, stand in front of me, watch and learn, draw it, replicate it and do. Fantastic.
Yeah.
How do we learn now?
Yeah, yeah.
Through a video, not necessarily where you can have and ask a question. Because if I didn't understand something, I could say, excuse me, say that again. And I could be able to gain things. But if I'm standing behind a camera and going, like, for example, if somebody was watching this at home and went, oh, I wish you just elaborated on that. Well, like, you can't be that person.
I think the visual learner, it's a brilliant tool. And I think that's... You know, whereas, you know, sometimes, you know, if you work, I mean, I work with a guy who trained me who was just brilliant, and I loved learning from him. And he was a left-hander, so I had to learn through the mirror, and it put many more demands on my learning. But he just communicated so well and so clearly that I absolutely wanted to learn. I didn't want to be taught by a righty. I just kept watching him through the mirror so it made sense and adapting and it was great.
That's similar. I'm a
visual
lefty.
Learner, that was exactly what I needed.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a lefty. The guy had to teach me, he was right-handed. So it was like, we had to try and learn how to flip that. And it's quite frustrating at first, isn't it? Like trying to figure out how do you flip the hands and stuff like that. Like,
I was trying to demonstrate
to
that
as well.
To be
fair, mate, your blue plaster gave away you were a lefty. I think that's it. But it forced, I mean, I found because it forced him to be a better...
Educator.
It forced him to teach me, and it forced me to really understand why he was doing so.
I'd just like to leave this topic on a saying, if we didn't have camera phones and videos, would there be as many educators now as there potentially would be if there wasn't?
Yeah.
I think that's a very obvious answer.
Yeah.
That education is now seen as you've reached a point within your career. Wrong for me. I believe that you educate because you want to help someone. I want to see, if I can walk out of a college class with loads of kids that I'm never going to see again, if one of them goes, I've learned something today, you've done your job.
Well, yeah, I think there's this point, I get that, but I think prior to camera phones, there was always lots of great educators out there, but it wasn't seen as a career, it wasn't seen as a job. It was kind of just something people did.
Yeah.
You know, I've always passed on education and so on. I think now it's been elevated and understood as being, actually, it is a really big deal to teach someone. It is a big responsibility to share.
Yeah.
And we've got better at communicating. And I think the communication is so much better now.
Yeah.
But with all these things, there will be some that aren't very good at it.
Yeah.
And camera phones and social media allows even the not particularly great educators a platform.
Yeah.
You know, and hey, who are we to say they're not good? If one person looks at that and goes, hey, that makes sense to me, then I get it. So where does life go for you? We're starting to edge towards the end of Barber Bash. We're ending up finishing our podcasting for our time in Belfast. Does Barber Bash continue on for both of you?
Oh, 100%.
Without 100%. Even a second. But I've been with Barber Bash since basically the start.
The start, yeah.
When me and Lynn first got into putting me on, the first obsession was get on that course. It's round the corner. It was in Liverpool. I'm in Chester. It's a 20-minute drive. So since them very first courses, I've been there. And I've only ever missed 3 Barber Bashes in my entire life. And they were due to commitments that couldn't be changed. So I'm not going anywhere. Barber Bash is me. Barber Bash runs through my blood and my body.
So the next one, that means I think the next one is Glasgow on the first.
Glasgow.
Scrambled eggs, pal.
Is it the 1st of September?
Well, you're better than us
early
at that.
September,
we turn up.
Like that.
We'll be there.
It's definitely September. I'll confirm September.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got less of a journey.
Yeah,
ahead.
This is the first time that it's been actually pretty convenient for me, which is pretty good. I'm not going to lie. It's
how dare
good.
You, Brandon? How dare you?
And are you doing, what's the plan? Do you start planning as soon as you finish this? Do you start planning Glasgow?
Today we've done a sports theme. Sports kind of, which can tie in any haircut with a great theme. So everyone knows that our models are our models. That's the last time we're going to do that.
Yeah.
So we're moving on. We've got a new theme. So excited. Brandon, Brody, myself, Gary, Daz, we're all going to get our heads together and come up with an unbelievable concept.
Excellent.
Create some great outfits, some great finished looks, things that all work well together, and just do it all again, because this is what we love to do. It's creating something together. I can ring Brandon midweek when I'm just sat on the toilet after work, say, what do you think of this for an idea? And he'll go,
Why are you doing this on a video phone?
Well, I did this the other day.
See, cameras can be used for some interesting things.
I saw Brandon a product.
And you're now, you've done nearly 9 years, you're barely a year. Your input is taken on board as much,
yeah,
you feel?
That's something that I love about the Barber Bash education team, is that we all feel valued. Like, we all get our chance to talk. We do regular voice calls and we talk about how we think the previous show went. We talk about our expectations for the next show. And we get a chance to be honest with how we think we've done and how we think we're doing. And like, I couldn't really ask for anything better.
And that's what's great about what we do again, section it off again. Like today, Gary's job is to run this show. He's an events organizer that's put on a great show for us all. Our job is to be the band, is to come on and do a great presentation. It's not Gary's job to say, have you got all your outfits together?
Yeah.
How good are your models? Have you executed that haircut well enough? That's down to us as a team to put all that together, which is our creation today.
That's fantastic.
You know, we put that on the...
It showed. It really does show. So, advice for anyone wanting to get into stage work?
I would...
How do you do it?
It's a tough one, really, because I always wanted to do it. And if you want to do it, every haircut that I used to do in the salon, doesn't matter whether people take the mick out of you or whatever you want to do, I used to stand there and go, right, what I'm doing next is... And have a reason why.
Practice it through. Going through your head.
Even if I was just saying it in my head over and over and over again, you're doing this because, and it gives this effect. And then the next part, do the same thing again. You just build up a repertoire of things in your head that you know, and then develop it on. Tips for people being on stage, don't be nervous.
Yeah.
Don't think that people are thinking what you think, because what's going on up there is different to what they're perceiving. Just do what you think is best and people will trust in you.
And yourself?
Well, my first tip would be get yourself to a barber bash and make yourself known. You know, make the people that put others on stage know who you are. And that can be from tagging us in social media, messaging us, coming to the shows, all those things. Interact with the community that will put you on stage. And then, aside from that, like Ollie says, practice how you communicate. Because it's not just about the haircut and it's about how you talk. Practice how you communicate. Whether sometimes you could just sit in the house if you're by yourself, run through a haircut or look at an image of a haircut that you've done and just talk through your process. And what you want to do is slowly clean up how you put that across. And through practice, you become clearer in your way of thinking. And then if you manage to find yourself with the opportunity to be on stage, then you'll be ready for it. But preparation is key. And just make sure that if you want it, you really go for it.
Well done. Guys, thank you so much for your time. Really enjoyed that. I guess the really big one for me is it's the amount of graft you boys are doing. So, you know, you are working in your stop, you're doing your stuff, you're travelling up and down the country. And I think that's a bit that gets missed. It's the long, laborious, time-consuming commitment. We appreciate your hard work. Hundreds of people here today have appreciated your hard work.
Thank you very much.
Lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Great to meet you, Brandon. Great I really appreciate you, man. It. We've been The Noble Barber. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe and like, and we'll be back and see you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up the toffees.
Welcome to The Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.